We roll in.
Hi.
Hello. That was a good show.
Yeah. It's an orderly
if show. Only the, you know, if we had the post music queued up. So when I said, why is it, I couldn't remember James either. I'm like,
yeah.
But, you know, it would have been nice if I said, why is James crying? And they would say, because he just got dunked on.
It's a sort of fake-ish rap. It's fake, but it, you know, it's this guy who's having fun with the whole idea.
Maybe he's at this point, he might be making a living on it doing YouTube, but it's kind of like a guy saying, hey, I can do some Lonely Island type stuff.
Right, yeah.
And it's a really funny video. These guys are wearing, you know, classic basketball jerseys from, you know, the Bulls and the Knicks days. And they're dunking on a hoop that's, you know, set at its lowest setting. Yeah. It's one of those backyard adjustable hoops that, you know, for kids, and it's at its lowest setting.
There's this whole story about him and this guy, Mike. There's this whole other songs about how him and Mike are best friends. And Mike then got shot in one of them, and James' mother came to try to, it was a nurse that tried to kill them, and then James' security guard came to try to kill them. It's really ridiculous and silly stuff, and it's pretty funny. And I think that not only was it pretty funny, but it was also like a catchy beat.
So it makes me think, you know, like, what about the other side, you know, about this, where what's his name? MC Frog or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, why is he always picking on James? Like, to see James as the victim? There's a Dr. Seuss book that I read to Allison called I Wish I Had Duck Feet. And the main character, there's this guy that's kind of a bully that he doesn't like, right? But if you could also read the book slightly differently, where this guy keeps picking on this other kid who, you know, he thinks is a bully, right? And it's, mm-hmm. he's James, you know, in the song. And you know, it's like, I'd love to see the other story written about, I can't remember the guy's name on I Wish I Had Duck Feet. Big Bad. Can't think of the name right now, but well, you know, hear James's story.
Well, let's face it though, James got dunked on,
but he could be a really nice guy.
Okay, should I get into this now? Do you have anything to bring up?
No, I got nothing. Let me go see if I took any notes down, but I don't think I got nothing. I can't even find the freaking file that I would write stuff in. My little memo pad. What are you doing?
I was waiting for you.
No, you go. I don't know if I have anything.
All right.
Nope. Last thing on the notes, it was the Hitler tea kettle. We talked about that. Didn't we? I think we did, like a month ago.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about Hitler together. So, let me start by bringing up the three classical laws of thought. The three.
Oh, we're getting into philosophy.
Classical, deep philosophical tenets. There's the law of identity. There's the law of non-contradiction. And there's the law of the excluded middle. Okay. Law of identity essentially says, A is equal to A. Anything that is A is equal to A. A thing is what it is.
Okay.
Law of identity. A law of non-contradiction essentially says that A is not not A. So if something is not A, it can't be A. If something is A, it can't be not A.
Okay.
The law of the excluded middle is a little bit slightly harder to figure out, but it's something along the lines of something that is in not A can never be in A. And something that is in A can never be in not A.
Okay.
These are Aristotle introduced these are as Platonic thoughts, and these are the basis for how rational thought has developed in the Western world. And it's been kind of, I think, shown to be recently, especially, slightly more naive than people may have thought upon before, because of the things that we've been able to find empirically. The laws of thought are based on this idea that we can think our way out of everything. We can, as long as we come up with laws that are immutable and work in every circumstance, then we can apply them. So the problem becomes, what happens if we find a situation where the circumstances don't exactly apply? My big problem that I see throughout all of philosophy and throughout the stuff that, you know, throughout religion, throughout the way people think about lots of things, politics, is that these classical Greek ideas came from this idea of purity, this idea that there is purity at some level. And we have shown through considerable work and effort that the idea of purity does not exist. In fact, it's prevented from existing by the very nature of existence, of reality itself. Nothing can be pure.
Okay.
You're not even asking. Okay. You've asked some questions on that.
Okay, so the last two things, the exclusionary middle, where if you're in A, you can't be in not A.
Right.
Doesn't that get pretty fuzzy if you ill-define A, or if A is a very wide group? You know, that was the first thing that went through my mind. Like, does A have to be something super specific, or is A
in order for the
white
law
people?
Of the excluded middle to... lost, it's sort of... If you have a proposition, then that proposition is either true or the negation is true. So
I see. Okay.
So if you have a proposition that has one of possible two possible outcomes, and either one is true or the other is true,
has to be two possible outcomes. It can't be a gay Republican, right? You know. Well,
so the idea here is that lots of these, you know, ancient Greek stuff were... First, let's get down a little bit of history. Why did these laws of logic propagate in so far into where we are today? And the reason is primarily through the spread of the culture, which was impacted mostly by the religion of the time. So what you have in Christianity is essentially a Hellenistic form of Judaism. It takes Hellenistic properties and adds to Judaism and turns it into this Trinity thing. And that became a big cultural revolution and conquered a lot of the Western world and the way of the Western world of thinking. And then there was the Islamic Revolution, which was a Middle Eastern or a Persian take on Judaism and on Christianity at the time. They all kept these ideas from antiquity, and most of the scientific advances that we have seen came from relying on these basic ideas. People go into the 9th, 10th century, and you're talking about the Arab authors who created algebra. Mm-hmm. You know, and it created based on these ideas and math that came from the Greeks that were saved. And then you go to things like, you know, in the 12th century, and Descartes, who formalizes Cartesian coordinate systems, and there's a whole lot of things in terms of geometry. But still everyone is looking at things as if the external, as if there are perfect forms. Even, you know, the Greeks were all looking at perfect circles, and they were looking at these perfect angles and how you could define them mathematically. And they ran into problems because, why is pi irrational? Why are these numbers irrational? Why can't we get an answer to them? But this kept going. We kept looking for these perfect things, these perfect laws, mm-hmm. these perfect ideals. And we kept finding ways that these perfect ideas would work. And then statistics comes along and says, well, there's perfect, but you're really going on boundaries here. You have to use mm-hmm. margins of error. And people recognize their margins of error, but the concept was that the Newtonian dream was the universe if you could fully understand it, it was a clock. It was a gigantic machine with a lot of gears. And all the gears worked in a very specific way. And you could totally understand that. And the only reason why your calculations would be wrong is because maybe some dust got on the machine somewhere. Maybe some external force was acting on the machine. But if you could remove all the external force or account for all the external forces acting on the machine, you'd be able to understand the machine completely. You'd be able to be Laplace's demon. You'd be able to see the past and the future. You'd be able to see everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really 20th century math and a string of mathematicians from Turing to Mandelbrot that really threw that concept away and destroyed it. And Mandelbrot is one of my mathematical heroes for just despising this idea of purity and saying, you know, look at this coaster. This coaster looks to us like a circle, but it's not a pure circle. There are problems with it. Even solar systems, even the sun is not a pure circle. It's squashed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even things that we think of as pure circles, a non-rotating Schwarzschild black hole, we don't actually see any of those in existence. Nature doesn't allow for that. They have charge and they have angular momentum. So they get slightly squashed. Things don't turn out to be in these circles. These circles are these perfect molds we throw on things, but the perfection doesn't exist. And the thing is that if you were to draw the law of identity as a Venn diagram, which John Venn was a genius for coming up with the idea of Venn diagram in the first place. But if you draw the law of identity as a Venn diagram, you have a circle. Inside the circle is A. Outside the circle is not A. Now, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law of identity right there. If you're inside the circle, you're A. If you're outside the circle, it's not A. But what we've learned is that, yeah, if you're here... And I'm putting it to a spot far outside the circle.
I see you're probably going towards quantum effect and uncertainty, right? Or you can't.
The quantum uncertainty is. I'm going there, but I want to get there.
Okay.
Along the path. But it's a symptom, it's not the effect itself. If you take a point far outside here, or far enough outside here, then yeah, it's not A. You take a point far enough inside here, it's A. But what about
statistically, but still statistics, right? Because there's still a 1 in a bazillion chance you are in A.
Well, see, what about a point there that looks kind of like it straddles the line?
Mm-hmm.
And as you zoom in and zoom in and zoom in and zoom in, the idea behind the mechanistic logical idea is as you zoom in, you'll find out if ultimately whether that point is across the line or not across the line.
Right.
But what we're finding with what we're studying is that as you zoom in and zoom in and zoom in, this line between A and not A gets fuzzy. And it gets fuzzy to the extent that you don't know, that it's impossible to tell whether something is in that. Now, for the most part, stuff exists outside of A, stuff exists inside of A, but there are the things on the underlying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of if you look at the Mandelbrot set, you have this wonderful fingerprint, and you can see that there are places where the values are simply zero, or they're simply one, or they're simply whatever. They're, you know, strong cards. But then as you zoom in on the edges, they twist up and they turn to weird things and they start to do these self-replications.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always along those edges that these fine, that you can't actually say pure things happen because it's unpredictable.
Okay.
The point being that trying to understand the world as pure versus impure fails for that very reason. And it's not just because of quantum effects. It's because at its very nature, reality is fuzzy. I mean, quantum effects demonstrates with, you know, with aplomb. It demonstrates this with a magnificent sort of beauty to it, which is that you can't say an electron has a position. For example,
mm-hmm.
You can say an electron has a possible range of places where if you search them, it could exist. But you can't say an electron has a position at that level.
Right.
A position ceases making sense. And what we find in philosophy, what I find is that this whole idea of purity falls apart. And when the whole idea of purity falls apart, then what are you left with? And you're left with a world of edges, you know, and edges that have unpredictabilities in them. So I think the laws of logic are not as pernicious, and are not, and even though they define science, right? Science is based on these rational rules. There has to be some understanding that they're not all encompassing, because they don't work for those values that are on the edge. They don't work for those values that to assert that you cannot, it turns out, define.
You know what you can define?
What's that?
Paula Deen's plummet from success.
Paula Deen.
Poor Paula Deen. So, if you don't know, she's been dropped from the Food Network because she said nigger.
It wasn't just that she said the word nigger in the past. It was that she had apparently, allegedly, been involved in some really sketchy things within the last couple of years, if not couple months.
Okay.
So not necessarily that she called anyone by any particular racial slurs in the direct last couple of months, but that she did do things like she was planning some sort of function. It might have been a wedding. I forget what it was, but she was planning this where all of the servers would be black people dressed up in white uniforms because she thought that was old timey and fun. And it reminded her of her plantation stuff. And then there were things like the white wait staff would be allowed to use the bathrooms, but the black wait staff had to use the bathrooms in the back. There's these lots of these things coming through where it's like, it's not just that she is a Southern gal. Yeah. She's a Southern lady, and she had some racist stuff in the past. You know, she's Southern. She grew up in the South and in the early 60s. It's not surprising that she'd be around racism and attendant.
Sure. But as a successful person in the business world.
Yeah.
Filming out of New York, I think, but if you can't figure out what is racist and what is not racist, you can't use the excuse like, this is how my pappy grew me up.
Yeah. Yeah. That excuse doesn't fly in 2013. It may have flown in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have been able to get away
with it. Here's a story. It says her book has rocketed onto the best-selling chart since then. Everyone wants to support Paula, I guess.
It's the same way when Chick-fil-A, announced their thing, and lots of people said, we're going to boycott Chick-fil-A. And then a whole bunch of people said, oh, we're gonna help out Chick-fil-A. Yeah. And so for a week or so, people were lining up outside, running around. And then, of course, that died out because, let's face it, it's a shitty chicken sandwich.
But it's an anti-gay shitty.
It's an anti-gay shitty chicken sandwich. But you're not gonna spend all your money on anti-gay shitty chicken sandwiches. Yeah, when that happens, when people make ridiculous statements, there are always gonna be people who run to their defense, and there are always gonna be people who run to condemn them. Dan Harmon recently had on his podcast. He was talking about how because he's coming back to do season 5 of Community.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in order to do that, he had to watch season 4.
Yeah, we talked about this last time.
Oh, yeah. And
that joke he made. Yeah, yeah, we talked about this last time.
And if you listen to it, in context, it was not the kind of joke that it was made out to be. But that doesn't matter so much because he has to recognize that he's in a certain position now that his stuff is going to be taken out of context. Mm-hmm. So he has to be either extremely careful when he says things like that or just not put them on his public podcast. Okay,
so here's a question for you. A little piece of trivia that's here on Google News. How many people do you think Texas has executed in your lifetime? since 1976.
Hmm. 50?
Up.
200.
Up.
500.
Yes. They just executed their 500th person since you've been born.
Wow. It's off by an order of magnitude.
You were, yes. Yeah, right here. Kimberly McCarthy on Wednesday evening became the 500th prisoner executed since 1976 when the death penalty was reinstated in the state.
I see what happened with Texas last night.
Yeah, yeah, that was so. There was the filibuster to block the.
It was a basically a bill that would have
abortion
ultimately right. closed almost all abortion clinics right. in the state.
So there was a giant filibuster, and then she lapsed the filibuster on a technicality. Then the crowd started screaming, trying to hold off the vote, and the vote happened after midnight. So it was. Annulled or whatever, so the vote didn't count, so they're going to call another special session.
And they already have, I believe. So, okay. Like, for the 1st of July. So, but the response that came out of this should show the lawmakers something, like... But
lawmakers don't care for something like
that. Yeah, the GOP right now is in such a weird, like, woods.
You know, I'm going to take I'm not going to take a devil's advocate on what the vote was about... But why should the vote not count because they couldn't get it in before midnight?
That's procedural rules.
It's dumb. It's super dumb.
Well, so is the procedural rules that she had to stand, to do it for the, she couldn't sit down, she couldn't lean on anything, she couldn't use a bathroom break for an entire filibuster.
You should make filibusters hard. They shouldn't be easy.
But... And then they were able to rule on whether she was going off topic or not. It wasn't like somebody reading from the dictionary, you know, what you could do in, you know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah.
It was
she had to stay on topic.
Yeah. She had to stay on topic for 13 hours in order to filibuster this, and
she made 11.
She made 11, and she did. You know, she did what needed to be done in order to get people to be aware of this. If it passes, it'll be challenged in court. So
it's ridiculous that they have to do it again because they came in after midnight, though. I don't care what my opinion is not based on what the vote was about or anything. It was about on like wasted taxpayer money, you know, like they did the vote, it came in, it won by a landslide, and it didn't count because it came after midnight.
Well, because when you call a special session, it has to get done in a certain period of time, and that's why she filibustered it, because if she could filibuster past that point in time, then
it's stupid. I don't think they should limit abortion rights, but the whole procedural stuff is stupid. All that
it's there for a reason. It's there for a reason. It's there so that things like this can happen. I mean, if things were not allowed to be filibustered, if things were not... I mean, there's a purpose to the filibuster. And the purpose of the filibuster is to get attention for something that and to show your community how important you think this is and to show the other people and allow other people to bring their voice in. For that period of time. The purpose of the filibuster is not to completely stop legislation forever. Mm-hmm. The purpose of the filibuster is to make a stand, is to give a soapbox when it is felt it is vitally important to do so for the sake of, you know, government operating correctly. And people can filibuster for wrong reasons. I mean,
could you imagine talking about something for 11 hours?
No. No.
I mean, when you hear, you know, just at a glance, right, you're like, oh, yeah, whatever. But, like, think about it. You know, you at home, think about trying to talk about, stay on topic about something for 11 hours.
Apparently what, you know, she asked in her campaign, asked for people to send stories and things that she could read that were related to this. So, because they had to be on topic, which is another weird rule.
Those crazy Texans. Killing 500 people, but not the baby, but not the unborn babies.
No,
that's a George Carlin bit. I won't take any credit for that one.
So, I had this one thing. Let's see here.
The U.S. is to retire most chimpanzees from medical research. Doing this because they're cute or because there's no additional value of using chimpanzees over rats? Because if it's because they're cute, I'm going to say that's bullshit too.
This is something I said to a friend of mine. He was asking, he was sort of, we were just sort of complaining about various things that were going on in America. And he's America? Saying, America. He was saying, why do we hate having fun so much? What's going on? And so here's what I said. We're compelled by our culture to try to make the world a better place, and we try to make it perfect based on our past idealism, which is thoroughly couched in our emotional development. But our idealism and experiences are necessarily individual, so our idea of perfection is necessarily skewed. So everyone has this individual idea of what the way things should be, and it's all skewed in various different directions. Doesn't help things any unless everybody starts to recognize it.
Right, right. I hear an interesting thing today. You know, Obama's talking about how natural gas, right, bridge fuel, less carbon, whatnot. But, you know, methane, if it's not burned, is a huge greenhouse gas, right?
Right.
So there was an argument where if you look at the whole picture of the carbon produced by burning natural gas and also the methane that leaks, that it might not make any net difference from coal because of the leaking methane and how potent of a greenhouse gas that is. Never thought of it. It's just a new angle, right? That you probably haven't considered. I haven't considered.
I haven't considered it, but I believe, and I'm not sure on this, so I could be very wrong, but I believe that methane is more readily destroyed by atmospheric processes than carbon dioxide.
I'm not sure the half-life or anything of you know, half-life's probably not the right term because it's probably more of a rapid decline, but I don't know. But they were talking about, you know, how, because, you know, which moon is like huge? Is that Titan's methane? Yeah. You know, it's as warm, quote unquote, warm as it is because, you know, methane is such a greenhouse gas, you know, more potent, much, much more potent than carbon dioxide or like in just about anything else. And so they're talking about how additional methane in the atmosphere could offset the carbon emissions from burning it versus coal. Something to think about, something to look into, something to fact check.
I mean, here's the problem with global warming, and it's explained this to my father, who's been a disbeliever in global warming. But I explained to him, look, it's absolutely true, without a doubt, that the atmosphere is getting warmer. There's no question. You can't deny that. And when the atmosphere gets warmer, that means that there's more energy in it. And that means that storms are going to be more powerful. And you couldn't argue with that because that's just the way things work.
I mean, most anti-global warming people are anti-human-caused global warming people.
Right.
Right? They'll say, oh, it's cyclical. It happens. There'll be an ice age. There'll be a heat wave. There'll be a... You know, getting them to think that humans are putting, you know, arguments. It's almost an impressive argument because the people that I've talked to, one person specifically I'm thinking of, you know, has a very small worldview of just what's right here in front of him. And then he pulls out the Earth's huge. And humans are only taking up this tiny part, you know, like area-wise, they don't take up that much. There's so much volume in the atmosphere, and it couldn't possibly be making a huge difference, you know? And it was almost an impossible argument from someone who, you know, his normal worldview is so small that, like, everything is so important. Every little thing is so important that he could actually flip and say, we're actually insignificant.
Right.
You know, but that was the argument that, you know, he heard on the radio, I guess, or something, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's of course not thinking that, hey, we've been doing this for 200 years. these things build up, and we've been slowly but surely increasing the amount that we're doing this. And yeah, eventually it has an effect.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out this monkey thing, the chimpanzees. They got 300 chimps that are retiring. They're keeping about 50 left for future research. Those poor 50 chimps. Dead. PETA, PETA likes it. Chimpanzees are special creatures. Blah, blah, blah. But are they giving them up just because chimpanzees are cute? Yes, I'm really, simplifying it, but come on. If there's actual value in testing chimpanzees, don't you think you should test chimpanzees instead of humans?
I am kind of a speciesist. I would rather not hurt the chimpanzees unless it was entirely necessary. But sure. I would rather not hurt everything that was entirely necessary.
Don't you think most people doing research at the NIH would have that opinion where, like, hey, if this test works on a rat, I'll use a rat. Mm-hmm. But no, I need a chimpanzee. Don't you think most of the scientists would do that? Like, all of them?
I think so. And ultimately, what we get around to doing is, we ultimately get around to doing testing on humans. We do it in very controlled environments.
Well, it's like the whole, because marijuana is a class one narcotic or whatever, you can't get marijuana in the lab. Do you want any more of this?
Awesome. It's chili, I think.
You can't do research on marijuana, right? You can't actually prove that there's health benefits to marijuana. Mm-hmm. It just boggles my mind that that's been a problem for more than 6 months in Congress.
Not only can you not do research on marijuana, you can't even use non-psychogenic hemp you can't produce it in the United States.
It just boggles my mind. Like, marijuana might be good for some things, but you can't research with it. And that wasn't fixed in half a session of Congress.
Right, yeah.
The fuck? Fix it. Say, researchers can test marijuana, and then we'll know if it's safe to do more things with. The fuck?
As I read this article that said, as the marijuana has become more and more prevalent in certain places where it's, functionally legal, even though it's not federally legal, it's still functionally legal in states and stuff, there have been... an upsurge in the amount of toddlers who have been going to and younger kids who've been going to emergency rooms for marijuana overdose. Basically they
secondhand?
Yeah, almost certainly.
Bad parents.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing though. Not one of them's died. Not one of them's come close to dying.
Okay.
It's just they're stoned.
I mean, this is, my argument's from coming from someone who has never tried marijuana.
Yeah.
But, there are anecdotal stories of marijuana having lots of health benefits. Mm-hmm. And scientists can't test the shit. In my world, that is fixed within 6 months. Congress says, okay, here's how you let scientists test the shit, and you pass it.
Yeah. It'll happen, just like gay marriage has happened. It'll happen.
That wasn't Congress, first off. That was the Supreme Court.
But the point is that the government follows the culture, ultimately. And when it tries to go against the culture, it
loses?
Ultimately.
Yeah.
So every time it's tried, it loses. Prohibition. Good example, right? Mm-hmm. And so the culture is becoming much more permissive of these sort of things that were at one time considered to be no-nos. Mm-hmm. As long as I can.
There was a good story on Marketplace about, Colorado and Washington, and their legalized pot, right, for recreational use. They have like a 40% tax on pot in Colorado. But they walk this fine line of allowing the black market, the drug dealers, to have a cheaper product, right? And keeping the black market thriving. So they want to discourage they want to discourage it from becoming an epidemic type thing, right? Where like it's so cheap that everyone buys pot becomes a pothead, you know? Like, so they're still kind of worried about the, if not physically addictive, the behaviorally addictive part of it, I guess, you know? And good point. You know, you want to, it's not as healthy as not smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to encourage it. But I mean, if you look at the health of alcohol versus pot, yeah, I'm sure you can make some really good arguments.
Exactly. Yeah, drinking is not as healthy as not drinking, but we encourage drinking all the time for lots of different reasons.
And, yeah, I mean, so yeah, there's a couple. I mean, so they're talking about like how do we price this and basically eliminate the black market without pricing ourselves, keeping it thriving. And then the other thing is from the Freakonomics podcast where you talk to Steve Levin. You know, he's like, you know, it's just a coincidence if people were smoking marijuana for 200 years and alcohol just came around, alcohol would be the thing that's illegal. You know, I mean, it's probably worse in several aspects, to many aspects, absolutely, than marijuana is. You know, I can't make all the arguments right now, but it's just because alcohol has been around for thousands of years, we tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana is much newer. Not tolerated. Much newer in the, I guess, the...
In the cultural.
The Asian, or the, I'm sorry, the European culture, right? I'm sure in some native cultures it's been around
and
you know,
for a while it was perfectly legal, and so were things like cocaine and heroin, and then they got associated with, mm-hmm, with bad... Were at the time considered to be bad cultural things.
Reefer madness.
Yeah. Well, it was associated with jazz music, and jazz music was bad. There's a lot. There's lots of different. There's the DuPont conspiracy idea, which the DuPont tried to get it down because they wanted Teflon to replace hemp. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different things. I don't know. No conspiracy theory has ever been proven to be true.
I'm going to put a stopper in this bottle because...
No, conspiracies have been shown to be true, to have happened, but no conspiracy theory, mm-hmm, has ever been shown to be true. We've shown that there are conspiracies that exist, but no, mm-hmm, big theory that's out there has been shown to be true. So,
I got a bunch of cherries from a neighbor, sour cherries. I'm going to brew a quick extract batch, wheat beer or something like that, with wheat extract. And I think I'm going to dose it with the dregs of this bottle from home.
Oh.
Probably should have left the last bit I drank in there and dosed it with that. But
at least spit out a little bit.
Well, we got a couple other sour beers in the fridge. If I can't preserve the little dregs that are in here, we'll use maybe that McKellar Creek. Or something. But yeah, so I want to save one of those beers and use that to ferment out this cherry beer. I just bought some wheat extract, only spent like $15 on the extract. It's only going to be like a 4% beer. In case I screw it up, I'm not going to invest much. I'm going to use, I got some really old brown Cascade hops. I'm going to use those. I'm going to use like 1 ounce of that to hop the beer, you know, just to, like, a lambic's not hopped very much, and they typically use old hops. So that's kind of the thing. I'm going to use dregs from a bottle. Either I was going to use dregs from a bottle or just let the cherries ferment the beer. I think I'll use dregs from a bottle. Give me a little bit of control over what's in there. Yeah. And so that'll be fun. We'll do that after I get back from NHC. The cherries are in the freezer. Probably going to freeze the cherries anyway to help macerate them a little bit, you know, break up the cell walls and whatnot. So,
you and I probably have not, you don't have time to see this movie, and I haven't had a chance to see this movie. Man of Steel.
Here, let me pause. I gotta pee.
Before I talk about Man of Steel, I want to talk about Vine for a second because I just looked at Jeff's Vine and it's fun. Did you see what Instagram is doing?
No.
They have now 15 second videos you can put.
So 15 seconds.
Yeah. So they're challenging
double plus one,
mm-hmm,
of Vine. There are some amazing Vines out there. They, you know, with Vine, you can do like stop action animation. Like if you look at the one I just posted, it shows me drinking the first beer of the night and it goes down, down, down. And that is elementary grade school shit compared to some of the stop actions. I saw one today where it was there was a couch and a remote on the coffee table, and the couch scoots forward, the cushion opens up, eats the remote, slides back, and burps. You know, it was all stop action from Vine. It was really good.
And especially impressive because you can't edit Vines.
Yeah.
You can only do...
Yeah, it's live to tape.
And so if you mess up, you got to redo it. So, yeah, people have gotten very good at Vine. And we'll see if Instagram... Seeing that it's a good idea, mm-hmm. and then just giving them more options.
Well, you know, I don't know if Instagram does it. I've taken to using a photo collage program, like for TwitPix. Instead of doing one photo, mm-hmm. you can put three into like a collage. Yeah. It tells such a better story.
Yes. Instagram does that, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I've been using a photo collage program on the phone.
I'm CBRing on Instagram, but I don't Instagram that much, so.
I don't have Instagram. But a three or four panel collage tells such a better story of TwitPix than just a single picture. Takes a little more effort to put together, but it's definitely the next. It's halfway or it's partway between a TwitPix and a Vine, really.
Yeah.
But with the Vine, with all the stop action stuff, you can do the same kind of thing.
You can do cool things.
You can have a couple frames of a ton of different things. I saw another one. It was like a 7-second movie, right? It was like, I didn't watch. The problem with a 7-second movie is you have to watch it a whole bunch to figure out what the movie's telling you. You know, but you know, it's like different scenes. It's all storyboarded and shit, and then it's recorded live to tape. It's crazy. Unless, is there a way to edit and then load it back into Vine?
I don't think so.
Like if you shoot video, put it on your computer, edit it down to 7 seconds, put it back in your photo reel, right? I wonder if you can load that into Vine anyway. I never really looked.
I never looked either. I don't know. I don't know the whole thing about Vine, but I know it's a concept that people were ambivalent about when it first came out, but people started to use it well. And then
I thought it was dumb until I found something where like 7 seconds of video really did what I needed it to do. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I tweet it and the story's out there. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what Vine's for.
It took me a while. Same thing, you know, you can go back in the history of the podcast and see how long it took me to get to understanding Twitter. Mm-hmm. In my defense, Twitter was being used wrong by a lot of people. And it took me a while to group up with the people who were using Twitter in the way that I felt it should.
It also took you a while to, I think it took you a while to realize you didn't have to catch everything that flew past you. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a problem with trying to digest everything that flew past your Twitter feed. And you have to realize you catch what you catch, you miss what you miss. Yeah.
But it's so much more, I love it so much more than Facebook, because in Facebook, this big thing of shit, and everyone comments and reads on it, and it just becomes this
it's bullshit.
Whereas with Twitter, I mean, you don't have to, like, Facebook devalued the word friend. Completely devalued.
Now, the thing I like about Facebook and Google Plus over Twitter is how you can do a richer post. You can have links, you can embed a photo, and you can do a richer post. However, Facebook, maybe I need to do a better job of curating friends, but Facebook is just a pile of shit. You know, there is nothing useful on my Facebook feed. I had someone send me a direct message, you know, an IM or a message on Facebook like 3 weeks ago, and I just found it the other day, and I missed what they wanted to do. And, Don't. If you're going to send me a Facebook thing, you need to send it like on my, I don't even know the terminology, right? You got to send me a comment or put it on my wall. If you're sending me a message, for some reason, I'm not going to see it because I'd never go there on my web browser. And my Facebook app's usually not running, but.
You need to give me the password to get in because.
Oh, the CBR?
Thing? Yeah.
I thought I gave that to you like a year ago.
You may have, but just send it to me when I get home, and you can send it to me via we have a OTR chat. Dave Morton tells us something that says he's listening.
We haven't heard from Dave in a while.
Yeah,
he's from England, right?
I don't know. I
believe so.
Yeah, we haven't heard from fermenting Dave. Yeast / bottom fermenting yeast, all a misnomer, as the fermenting occurs in the wort. I don't know what that means exactly. I mean, so, there's yeast that ferments at the top, and there's yeast that ferments at the bottom.
So, yes, the yeast... It's not. Okay, so to try to answer Dave's question, as I understand it, it's not the location where the fermentation occurs. It's the location where a majority of excess yeast exists.
Okay.
In an ale, you have all that Creusen and stuff up on top, all that foamy stuff. There's yeast in there, right? In a lager, there's a bigger buffer of yeast sitting at the bottom, some dormant, some working. And yes, there's yeast suspended in the beer, in the wort, fermenting away, but you don't have that Creusen at top. That's my best attempt at reconciling his statement.
Okay, so an ale yeast, a quote-unquote top fermenting yeast, there will appear to be a larger mother culture at the top than anywhere else. And with a bottom fermenting yeast, there will appear to be a larger mother culture at the bottom than anywhere else.
I've never heard mother used with beer yeast, but I get what you're saying, and I say that's mostly true.
Yeah. But the yeast is throughout the word itself, and it's suspended there during the shop.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Makes sense. Okay, so Man of Steel. I've heard things about how it's a crappy movie. I have not heard... I've not seen it, so I can't say for sure whether it's... Sorry, I keep kicking Jeff.
It's okay. I was stretching my legs.
I don't like Zack Snyder very much, period. I don't like his movies. I don't like his directing style. I don't like the idea of a...
So, I'm sorry. Facebook, you are a manager. I think you just click on the gear and see if you have...
I don't log into my to my account?
Well, you have to. That's the only way to do it.
I don't want to.
Well, then you're not going to manage the Facebook page or the Facebook Crafty Radio page.
Then people will see that I've logged in my account the first time in like 5 years and start sending me stuff.
Unfortunately, I guess you're not really allowed to create up an anonymous account, but you need your account and you are a manager. If you log in and click on the gear, you'll see the Crafty Radio page.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll do it.
Anyway. Man of Steel, Zack Snyder. I heard the first two-thirds were good. The last third was a over-the-top, inconsequential action scene, and there's a bunch of crypto-Christian bullshit in it.
Yeah, Superman is 33 years old and sacrifices or, you know, does sacrifices himself. And yeah, it's... There's even apparently a scene where Clark is in a church and... It's very obvious because then, like, you see, like, his half of his face and half of, like, a Jesus face. Mm. It's like they're hitting a little thick on the.
It sounds like it suffered from the need to make it play internationally, right? Like these Transformer movies are huge in Japan, you know.
Right.
I don't mean Japan literally. I just mean, you know, that whole I'm huge in Japan thing, right? Where these Transformer 3, Man of Steel, huge action scenes, gross well worldwide. And you're not going to see, you know, the thoughtful films.
I mean, the ultimate thing is that Superman's a shitty character. Superman has always been a shitty character because it's a character that requires that is either a deus ex machina on his own or requires a deus ex machina to defeat him. An unbeatable alien godlike creature. And you can't make a very good story around that unless you are just... I mean, I don't see how you can make a good growth story to something that already has all the growth it needs.
I mean, there's... So I've never watched Clark and Lois.
Uh-huh.
But I could imagine him socializing, you know, getting used to...
That's humans. The only part of the character that has some oomph to it, which is this idea that he's hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's awkward because he's trying to figure out how humans,
right,
you know, socialize. And,
but that's not apparently a part of this movie. It's just...
Well, that would not sell internationally. That's not huge in Norway.
It's just he's just sort of brooding, a brooding all-powerful god-like entity who isn't sure he wants to be the man who can destroy cities to save four people. And it turns out he does destroy entire cities to save four people.
Those are just extras. Don't worry about it. That'd be a great Superman. Like, you know, like fan fiction type thing where he just gets pissed off and like tortures everyone.
Well, the best Superman story I've ever read was called Superman Red Sun. It was a sort of a 6-issue special. I'm not a comic book guy, but I heard about this and I sought it out. It's the idea of what if Superman, instead of landing in Kansas, landed in Russia and became sort of the Russian.
Oh, and the Americans were evil.
Instead of being the American, you know, the all-American Superman, what if he was the all-Russian Superman? And it had a great idea and a pretty cool storyline that all ended up going back on itself. So it made it. It worked really well.
That's a fun. I mean, you know, look at all the places in history of humanity Superman could have landed. Nazi Germany, You know, all kinds of places. Burma, you know, like and be fun to like see little vignettes of like all those different Supermans growing up, like real quick, like, you know, 10 minutes each or something. That'd be a fun way to see it. Sounds like it's been, you know, it was covered pretty thoroughly in the comic series, but, you know, seeing just different ones, like, oh, he crashes on Antarctica, right? And Doesn't find anyone for like 50 years. And
or crashes in the ocean and is raised with whales. And then. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it all goes to the silly idea that Superman would look like us anyway, being an alien. I mean, Superman should look like some sort of jellyfish / insect Cthulhu. Yeah, seriously.
That wouldn't get Lois Lane all hot and bothered, though.
No. No, but it always amazes me that whenever aliens are depicted, almost every single time aliens, you can probably count on your fingers and toes how many times in science fiction aliens have not been depicted as having some sort of mammary glands right here, right? Female aliens have boobs right where mammalian, where human boobs are.
Yeah, I mean, the bipedal humanoid, right, is a nice. Well, first of all, for the production part of it, it's easier to do. You know, it, up until recently, it was really expensive to do something like Jabba the Hutt.
Sure.
You know?
But if they were to show, if Star Wars were to show a female Hutt, I guarantee you it have some sort of bra or something. I would have boobs.
Well,
I mean, it's shorthand, right? I mean, it's shorthand for telling this is a female.
Right, right. I mean, you could either do that or put on like crazy bow. Lipsticks, you know, or a bow. Yeah, like Minnie Mouse bow.
Or Pac-Man, right? So, but it's just funny that, like, you know, because a lot of these sci-fi things also depict relations between different species, and that just seems... like that.
Okay, so here's a question for you. A movie with a bipedal humanoid insect with boobs, because, you know, insects wouldn't have mammary glands, right? Yeah. So where's the insect bipedal humanoid with boobs? That's what I want to see.
I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure they're out there. I mean, really, a bipedal insect would have an ovipositor, and that's how you could tell.
You know, humanoid, like, if you ever seen the movie Bugs, Disney Pixar thing, the grasshoppers are, that they're kind of they're more humanoid, right? They have extra legs, but kind of the middle legs are inconsequential, or it's four arms and two legs. They stand up, you know, so that's the kind of thing, like, almost like an alien, like from Aliens, but more insecty than They are insecty, aren't they? Yeah, I mean, they're pretty insecty.
The aliens are, well, they're xenomorphs, right? They kind of combine a lot of different things.
They're pretty bug-like. I mean, they're more of a humanoid bug than anything else.
I think they're kind of crab-like, if anything. They're arthropods, right? But they're...
Yeah, okay. Well, humanoid crab, humanoid bug, there's not much... There's a lot of the same parts going on there.
Right.
Trying to think. It'd be great to have an encyclopedia of sci-fi here to see like what else was produced. Tribbles didn't have boobs.
That we know of.
They were mammals, though. I mean, they were very furry.
Well, no, they were born pregnant, so...
But they're furry. Probably mammals. That's the trouble with tribbles right there.
Dinosaurs had feathers, my friend. Dinosaurs had feathers.
Oh, I just saw on news. They just pulled DNA from a 700,000-year-old horse frozen in the Klondike.
Cool.
So that's the oldest complete DNA chain that we've got. 700,000 years.
That's got to be a shock to if they managed to... I mean, obviously, it's incomplete and broken, but if they ever managed to clone that horse would not survive in our atmosphere very long.
I'm about out of ideas. I gotta get up early, drive to Philly, drop the kids off at grandma's and drive to Philly. West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playgrounds where I spent most of my days.
Well, make sure you don't get dunked on.
I won't get dunked on by the Fresh Prince or anybody else.
Have a good week, everybody.